there will be no need for any more than a formal conference noting the takeover, noting any wishes that the president may have at this time. And so the party goes to the White House. It hasn't been revealed whether Mrs. Kennedy had a chance to change that blood-soaked stocking on the way from Dallas to Washington. She probably paid no attention to it, whatever. We have a statement now from a Protestant leader on behalf of the country's 3.5 million Episcopalians, the Right Reverend Arthur Lichtenberger. He's presiding bishop of the Protestant Episcopal Church in the USA. He says this, and we quote him directly. "The whole world is shocked and saddened at the news of the assassination of our president. May God in his infinite goodness receive him into the life abundant. I join with men and women everywhere in our expression of grief and assure the family of President Kennedy of our continuing prayers. We thank God for the integrity and courage of John Kennedy. He has given his life for his country." That's about the fifth time there has been a reference to the fact that President Kennedy has given his life for his country, just like a soldier gives his life on a battlefield, because certainly exposure of their bodies by presidents is an act of devotion in itself, and all presidents go through it. Ladies and gentlemen, the NBC Radio Network will stay on the air with continuous coverage of the tragic death of President Kennedy until 1 a.m. Eastern Time tonight. And we will resume coverage of A Nation in Mourning and all the events that surround it. We will resume at 7:30 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, Saturday, tomorrow morning, with continuous coverage. From Dallas, Texas, the report that federal, state, and local authorities have coordinated their search for anyone who may have been connected with the assassination of President Kennedy at 12:30 p.m. in Dallas, Texas today. One of the most determined and yet invisible manhunts in history is underway. Of course, they have a suspect called by the Dallas police a prime suspect in the person of Lee Oswald, a 24-year-old young man who once defected to Russia, who is known to be an admirer of Fidel Castro. They have this man in custody. But there are evidences in the circumstances of the assassination that it was well planned and possibly more than one person took part in it. Therefore, a manhunt is underway just in case that Oswald turns out to be not the man, or in case, if he should be the man, there are others involved with him. The killer now, the police now report they believe, beyond a shadow of a doubt, that the president's killer had been hiding in the upper story of the textbook storage building, the warehouse, commanding an unobstructed view of the presidential cavalcade. The place where the president was slain was selected with infinite care, diabolical care. We've told you before that the Great White Way of Broadway is not as white as it usually is, especially on weekends. A special order has gone out that has closed all of the live Broadway shows. We take you now to the New York Theater District, to Joseph Michaels, NBC News, Times Square.
I can see a sign opposite me which says 3. That, of course, is New York time. It comes to my mind primarily because it's one of the few signs that you can see here on Times Square. We're right in the heart of it tonight. You can walk across the street with great ease, and you are not going to have the full light of day that you usually have that's associated with this great center of New York's playland. The Paramount Theater with its huge sign, the big NBC sign across the way, the waterfalls that are usually lit up for the astonishment of the visitors to this city. All are quiet tonight. So are the theaters of the city. There are 33 Schubert theaters throughout the country, which we are told have been closed by the Schuberts voluntarily tonight. Other theaters in the city are all closed down. Refunds will be made, we are told, during the course of coming time. Most of the theaters are not worried about this tonight. They are taking a substantial loss, almost $250,000, $200,000. We noticed something interesting, and we have just called two young ladies over because they're carrying signs, and the signs said that the new frontier must live despite what has happened. Girls, when did you get the idea of making these signs?
We were sitting and talking about it, and the time was passing. We heard that he was dead. And then, right then and there, we decided there was something we had to do. We couldn't just sit there and do nothing when he was dead.
Well, why did you do it?
We felt we had to show that other people are concerned, that people are against him.
Thank you very much. Well, these are just two young people who, on their own, decided that they had to do something for the things in which President Kennedy believed, and this was their spontaneous demonstration to come down here from their school to Times Square with these signs. They have gathered just about the only crowd that one can see in this square. Usually, it's just starting to move at this time of night, people hustling to the theaters, other people on their way homes, but tonight, all is quiet here. In the middle of the square, just put up today for the Volunteers of America, for a charity, a great big jovial Santa Claus, looking ironical indeed and tragically so under the circumstances. He stands there with his bell held up and his green glove and his white beard and a jolly ho-ho expression on his face, which absolutely nobody here feels, Morgan.
Anything further to report from that area?
No, just quiet in New York. The theater attendance, as you know, has been called to a halt. The movies are closed. Only a few shops are open in the city. Just people going on their way quietly, in unprecedented quiet. There's been nothing like this here in Times Square, I'm sure, since the night of the death of Franklin Roosevelt.
I was just going to ask you how it looks in Times Square without it being bright as day in the nighttime.
It just is almost too weird to be believed. The cigarette sign that's usually puffing smoke at the people is completely shut down. The signs that usually are flickering and dashing and darting are all gone. The traffic moves through quite freely. It just isn't the Times Square that all of us knew or all of us can remember. It's hardly the gay white way. There's nothing gay about it at all. I'm told by those who were here at that time that the closest resemblance that one can find, that it looks as it did very much during the war.
Thank you, Joseph Michaels.
All right, Morgan, that's the picture here.
We have reported earlier than now that an extraordinary effort has been underway to impress all nations throughout the world of the continuity of the United States government. Some nations do not have such continuity. Another illustration of this, a report that the first White House cabinet meeting under President Lyndon Johnson will begin exactly 3 minutes from now. As you know, critical cabinet officers are in Washington, especially Secretary of Defense Robert McNamara. One very important officer is not there, with five other cabinet officers. Secretary of State Dean Rusk is on his way to Washington from Honolulu. Dean Rusk and the other five officers were on their way to Tokyo when they were notified of the president's death, turned back. They're due in Washington just after midnight Saturday morning. Nevertheless, President Lyndon Johnson has called the first cabinet meeting to proceed at once without Secretary of the Treasury Douglas Dillon, without Secretary of the Interior Udall, or Freeman of Agriculture, or Hodges of Commerce, or Wirtz of Labor. They had planned a conference in Tokyo on trade that was to have begun Monday. And now, a brief pause.
The NBC Radio Network will stay on the air with continuous coverage until 1 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. We will resume broadcasting at 7:30 a.m. Eastern Standard Time Saturday tomorrow with continuous coverage. We pause now 10 seconds for station identification.
These are the Detroit News Stations, WWJ and WWJ-FM, Detroit.
The late president's body is now on the way to Bethesda Naval Hospital just outside of Washington. The purpose for that trip is official. A sad official duty in the case of the death of a president of the United States in this manner. A routine autopsy will be performed at the Naval Hospital. Later, the body will be removed to a Washington funeral parlor. That's later tonight. And it will be tomorrow that the body will be taken to the White House, where it will be put on view in repose in the East Room of the White House. The Kennedy family and the leading officials of the United States government will view it there. The body will be in repose, as we've explained to those who heard us earlier, because that is a sign of private mourning. So the top officials of the United States that go to the White House tomorrow will go there because they are personal friends as well as official associates of the President of the United States. And ahead of Mrs. Kennedy is the saddest, the most difficult task of all, aside from being present helplessly at the shooting and at the death of her husband, the task of notifying Jacqueline and John Jr. that their father is gone. We have no more details on the arrest of young Lee Oswald in Dallas, Texas. There seems to be no question about it that the thoroughness of this interrogation takes precedence over all other aspects. The police are of the continued belief in Dallas. We have no word from federal authorities, of course, as yet, that they have a prime suspect in the person of Lee Oswald, the 24-year-old American who once defected to Russia and who later expressed his admiration for Fidel Castro. This young man has also been in New Orleans. He has led anti-American activities in various parts of the United States. It is difficult to understand why he didn't stay in Russia when he was there. Incidentally, the United Nations announces that Secretary General U Thant will attend the funeral of President Kennedy in the name of the 101, I believe it is, member nations of the United Nations. The President of the General Assembly, Carlos Sousa Rodriguez, and other top officials will accompany U Thant. A special memorial will be held at the General Assembly on Monday morning at about 10:30 a.m. in the United Nations building in New York. President de Gaulle has sent two messages to the United States to stress the friendship of France for our people and his love for the President of the United States. He considered that particularly important because of the strained relations between the two countries in recent months. It's also noteworthy that President de Gaulle has repeatedly pointed out that the differences between us shall never exist in emergency or in case of attack. Let's go now across the Atlantic again to Bernard Frizzell in Paris for more reaction in France.
The instant reaction in Paris to the death of President Kennedy was disbelief. Immediately after came deep shock. After that, horror. For President Kennedy had the affection of the French people, and they could not believe that so young a man, so young a president, could disappear so suddenly, the victim of an assassin's bullet. President de Gaulle, 73 years old today, and a target in the past of an army of assassins, declared, "President Kennedy died like a soldier under fire, and he saluted the dead president in the name of the French people, describing them as a friend always of the American people." Hundreds of Americans gathered around the United States Embassy and along the Champs-Élysées, reading a special edition of the black-bordered Paris Herald with its headline crying, "Kennedy assassinated." A concierge glued to her radio, I heard her saying simply, "Le pauvre, le pauvre." the poor man. This is Bernard Frizzell, NBC News, Paris.
In view of your very intimate knowledge and association with Frenchmen and with French politicians and French leaders, Bernard, would you care to hazard an estimate of the effect of this on Franco-American relations?
Yes, Morgan. I would certainly say that this is going to tie us even more closely to the French people than we have been tied to them in the past, because this is going to create an emotional link. I do not think that it will make very much difference on the official level, but certainly among the people here, there is no question that the reaction that they have had to this shocking event is one of the deepest mourning and the most considerable affection that I have ever seen displayed for a public figure in all the years that I have been in France.
And that is a significant reaction.
It certainly is, Morgan.
It will undoubtedly give President Charles de Gaulle more pause, more time for thought, and it is certainly a consolation to the people of the United States to feel a bit closer to Frenchmen the way it used to be than we did a few days ago. President George Meany of the AFL-CIO, the nation's largest labor organization, has sent a telegram to President Lyndon Johnson. He has pledged the full support of the nation's major labor organization to Mr. Johnson in his task as president. Mr. Meany also sent a telegram of condolence to Mrs. Kennedy. Incidentally, they are well acquainted, even though many people don't know it. The top official of the AFL-CIO learned of the assassination of President Kennedy while driving to Washington from New York. He had presided here in New York at this week's AFL convention and was going back into the task of running the great labor organization from Washington. Their major headquarters are there. As you probably know, both President Kennedy and Mrs. Kennedy were very concerned about the attitude of Texans, and particularly of Democrats and Texans, toward the chief executive before he went there. Not that he believed or she believed they weren't good, loyal Americans. That wasn't the point. The Texas Democratic Party is in a bit of a dither. It's having what it has had in the past on occasion, an attack of factionalism between Senator Yarborough and Governor John Connally. They are, to use rather rough words, John Connally leads the conservative elements of Texas and is a protege, by the way, of President Lyndon Johnson. And Senator Yarborough leads the liberal wing of the state. He's been a constant supporter of the New Frontier in nearly every one of its propositions before the Congress. So that's one reason why Mrs. Kennedy went to Texas with the president, to sort of help him try to cement the two wings of the party in that state. And there were some signs in the various crowds that they've encountered there the two wings of the party had buried the hatchet to a certain extent. One side there said something to the effect that Goldwater in 1864, meaning that the Democrats don't want that man. The Republicans, many of them in Texas, are for Goldwater for president. And after the earlier morning meetings in Dallas today, and after a rather friendly meeting in San Antonio, although some party officials were not there, Mrs. Kennedy turned to her husband this morning before the tragic events, and she said, "You can't say that Dallas wasn't friendly to you." She made the remark as they rode past the cheering crowds in Dallas on the way to a rendezvous with death. Mrs. Kennedy today wore a stunning pink wool suit, matching chipper pink pillbox hat. She had a bunch of yellow roses with her in the open-top White House limousine, although at one point she had been presented with red roses that clashed with her pink outfit. Those roses had been presented to her, by the way, the yellow ones, at the Dallas airport. They remained in the blood-spattered car outside the hospital as her husband lay dying inside. The scene of the president and Mrs. Kennedy in that awful hour, 12:30 p.m. Central Time today, has remained with many, many, many American citizens who saw much of it. Mrs. Kennedy clutched her husband to her as he slumped forward in the seat of the car. She knelt on the floor over him during the high-speed ride to Parkland's hospital emergency ward. She helped lift her dying husband onto the stretcher, and she was taken into the hospital and whisked from view. She appeared stunned as she entered the hospital. Physicians attending the president said they didn't take time to notice whether she or any members of the White House staff were with the president when he died. Members of the White House party said Mrs. Kennedy's first thought was to be with her children, Caroline and John Jr. Both of them have birthdays next week. And then, of course, she was taken immediately to Love Field in Dallas, where the White House party was to return to Washington. They have now arrived there. On the plane that carried her to what had been a personal triumph for her in Texas, she joined witnesses. There were 25 of them, all told. And she watched Lyndon B. Johnson sworn into office as President of the United States. And she watched the casket of her husband placed solemnly aboard. Mrs. Johnson embraced Jacqueline Kennedy. And the three of them, President Lyndon Johnson after he had taken the oath of office, and Mrs. Johnson and Mrs. Kennedy joined hands briefly. And they all rode back to the Capitol with the new president. He himself is in the White House now. He has called the first cabinet meeting for 6:30. Presumably that's 10 minutes underway. If not, it will be shortly underway. And it is noteworthy that the First Lady, who is also at the White House, remained composed all the time she was at the hospital in Dallas and all the time on the way home. And she knew from the doctors, she was told on the way to Washington, that the doctors had told the party with the president that they had never had any hope of saving his life the minute they saw his wounds. One through the head, another through the neck. The first wound, the major one, had done considerable damage, brain damage, tissue was destroyed. Apparently, the president had not regained consciousness. He was only for one instant aware that he'd been shot. As one eyewitness had said in reference to that one instant, there was that awful look on his face, and he slumped forward to the floor where Mrs. Kennedy kneeled with him. Incidentally, at the oath-taking, aboard the plane just before it returned to Washington, plane Air Force One, President Johnson put his hand on the Bible, his left hand, and he swore, as we are all familiar with the oath, to faithfully execute the duties of president and to defend the Constitution. And the oath, as we've noted, was administered by a United States district judge, the first woman ever to administer the oath to the President of the United States. Incidentally, Mrs. Sarah T. Hughes, Judge Sarah T. Hughes, had been named to office by President John Kennedy in 1961. And now for a report on the inevitable trend of events in the center of Washington. To Ray Scherer at the White House in Washington.
American President Lyndon Johnson is holding his first function as President of the United States. He got out of the helicopter here at 6:26. First we saw red lights coming out of the sky, then we heard the roar of the chopper, then the lights went on, the door opened, out came Mrs. Johnson, then came Lyndon Johnson, then came George Ball of the State Department, Secretary McNamara, Mr. Bundy, the President's Special Assistant for Security Affairs, Walter Jenkins, Assistant to President Johnson. They paused briefly in the lights. There were a few handshakes. President Johnson stopped to shake the hands of members of the press. His face looked very grave. He walked directly to his office, and he is now conducting business. A few minutes after he landed, another helicopter landed, and out came Senate Majority Leader Mike Mansfield and Senate Republican Leader Everett Dirksen. The others are gathered here. As soon as this security meeting is over, presumably he will meet with the leaders. Any questions?
I would like to point out, Ray, are you on with me?
Yes, I hear you, Morgan.
You know, we've had very, very little difficulty with these circuits today. It's... we can't call it fortunate, but it's fortuitous at least that we're having so little trouble with our circuits. Only one missed circuit since the death of the president. But I'd like to ask more or call your attention.
Yes.
You have covered so many events in the White House. The heart attack, I remember you and I were on together for hours. When the heart attack occurred
in 1955.
President Eisenhower's time. I believe none of our reporters is more competent or equipped to comment on this very insistent idea that the leaders of our nation are now conveying to us of the continuity of the American government. Foreigners are so little aware of that. Would you like to comment on that point?
Well, of course, President Johnson has been intimately in on everything that has happened having to do with foreign policy. He has made a number of trips to the president. He sits in on National Security Council sessions. He was with the president the last in his last hours. He's now back here. Immediately he sits down with the cabinet members. There will be no possible lapse. What they're doing now is filling him in on every situation in which impinges on foreign and military affairs. Secretary McNamara is presumably going over what the situation is in Vietnam, how our forces are deployed in Germany, what the situation is vis-a-vis the Russians along the Autobahn, everything that could possibly flare up. And Mr. Bundy is, of course, filling him in on all sorts of vital security matters which are only privy to the president and his inner circle. Now they've been given to Mr. Johnson. The thing that strikes me about this whole occurrence today is that it again brings out what a thread of tragedy runs through the Kennedy family. Brother Joe was killed in a Navy plane crash, World War II. A sister was killed in a plane crash in 1945. The president was almost killed in World War II in the Pacific. Later, he almost died during an operation on his back. His father was felled by a stroke. Their son died in August, and now this.
Yes, it is to all of us the same, and I hardly need comment on the feeling of all Americans. The exceptions, I suppose, are so few we can ignore them at this time. Incidentally,
yes.
Ray Shearer, we have on with us the senior European correspondent of NBC in London, who also has dealt in the general areas of leadership that you're so familiar with. And he's on with us. Joseph C. Harsh, would you come in, Joe?
Yes, I'm here. I hear you.
Do you have any questions at the moment on what you would like answered about things here, or do you have some suggestions for us?
Morgan, a point I think I would like to make, if I can, is that we were all stunned when this thing happened, but the tributes that have just come from all the leaders in this country are really quite remarkable. Prime Minister Sir Alec Hume has just done a long television statement about it, which starts out saying that at times when the mind and heart stand still, everything in one cries out in protest. And he went on for a long and eloquent tribute, followed by the leader of the opposition, Harold Wilson. What did he say? He recalled the remark on Lincoln's death, now he belongs to the ages, and he said, that's the way we will think of the death of President Kennedy. Joe Grimmon said that all through Britain, people will feel tonight that this is a totally unexpected personal tragedy. He will be deeply mourned for a very long time. Some of the morning newspapers are out now with the whole front page on this and nothing else. This is deeply felt over here.
It certainly serves to illustrate the intimacy of the alliance between the United States and Great Britain. I remember Lord Hume, when he was Lord Hume instead of Sir Alex, remarking that he supported the United States primarily because of the realities. He loved this country, but he primarily thought of the realities of the fact that we were the prime power in a nuclear age, and it was only sensible that he would recognize the primacy of that power.
Yeah.
Morgan, may I say that I think what you said there is tremendously important. I don't think I had realized until I saw the eloquence and the deep sincerity of the tributes here how deep this thing really is. It does come out.
Ray?
Yes, Morgan.
I see that there's a funeral mass to be said Monday in the Shrine of the Immaculate Conception in Washington for President Kennedy, and that Richard Cardinal Cushing, his old friend, will preside.
We'll do the mass. Yes. Morgan, I take it, are you up to date on the arrangements here tomorrow?
Yes, we're fairly up to date, but why don't you fill us in again? It won't hurt.
Well, the body will lie in repose. That's the phrase being used in the East Room. From 10 to 11 will be reserved for the family. At 11 o'clock, Vice President Johnson, Speaker McCormick, members of the cabinet, and various men who hold executive appointments will appear in the room. At 2 o'clock, the Supreme Court members of the judiciary will view the body. At 2:30, members of the Senate and the House, governors of the states and territories, many of whom are en route to Washington at this moment, flying in. At 5 o'clock, members of the diplomatic corps. Presumably Sunday, the body would be moved to the Capitol.
Morgan, if I could break
yes,
in...
Yes, Joe, do that.
There is one question I'd like to put to both you and Ray. Everyone I talk to here asks me what difference in policy there's going to be now that Lyndon Johnson is president instead of John F. Kennedy. I've been away from Washington so long that I do wish you'd fill me in.
Ray, you go first.
Well, that's a very difficult question to answer. No one can answer that question. It's a question that we put to several senators earlier in the day. We put it, among others, to Senator Mansfield and to Senator Humphrey, both of whom are extremely close to the president. Their answer was that they foresaw no immediate differences in policy, although each president handles things differently. They said that Vice President, or President Johnson, was thoroughly familiar with the workings of the Senate and House, having been a member of both, and that they thought there would be a great continuity of policy.
I think there will be too, Joe, and I'll tell you why. Because if you will recall, in past civil rights bills, even before President Kennedy was elected, that Lyndon Johnson presided over the great compromises. Now, I don't mind to call
yes,
Lyndon Johnson a compromiser. I mean to say that this man has a deeper understanding of the factionalism of the South than has President Kennedy, even though the president has been friendly with many Southerners, as the Virginians. He's been very close to several of the Virginians, including Governor Battle. But the point is that Lyndon Johnson has a certain touch about Southern politicians that President Kennedy didn't have. And now, I don't believe he's going to change President Kennedy's policies, for example, on civil rights. But I believe he will have a more coercive effect on Southerners, and the reason is because of the great tragedy. Sometimes things, we can never call them really fortuitous. We don't know, because you won't know for another generation the full significance of this. But if anything could pull this nation together and stop the divisions on foreign policy and on civil rights, if anything could do it, and some of our economic problems, I would say the assassination of our president is done. First, it's taken Americans out of their personal preferences in politics. It's taken them completely out. Yeah. They realize, you know, what only we realize in great emergencies, that we are a nation after all, and we have no right to our personal preferences over other Americans. I think this has done that. And then, in addition to that, it's given President Johnson the opportunity to pull all Americans together. I don't know why it had to be from such a tragic circumstance. He's got an opportunity of at least a generation. He's been effective in the past. Let's see how he does it. I know his own attitude is impatience in such matters, but he proceeds patiently. So we have a consummate politician who has rephrased that old axiom of American politics, that a politics is the art of the possible. He has rephrased that. He doesn't say it's an art. He says that politics is the science of the possible. Now, this man has an opportunity to apply that science in a way that no other president in our memory has.
Now, let me ask another question that's come up here tonight several times. Is it not true that Lyndon Johnson has spent most of his political life dealing in domestic political and economic matters rather than in foreign policy? Does this mean that Dean Rusk is really going to be our foreign minister in all respects?
That's difficult. Ray, you have already made remarks about the fact that Lyndon Johnson has made many foreign trips for President Kennedy. I wonder if you'd like to extend those remarks.
Well, recently, it would almost seem that he has been away from Washington on trips more than he's been here. He went through all the Benelux countries. He's been all through the Far East. He presumably has an intimate face-to-face acquaintanceship with the leaders of Europe. What strikes me about Johnson is the fact that he was really an absolute whiz in running the Senate. He ran it by almost sheer force of personality. And as you say, he knew the arts of compromise. Well, the question is, how well these talents can be adapted to the presidency. And I can only say we shall have to see.
But may I go back, though, and say, is it not true that in spite of these trips, which sometimes were involved some domestic politics, too.
Indeed.
And didn't involve a serious study of high foreign policy. Is it not true that, that in this area, Lyndon Johnson is fairly inexperienced?
I wouldn't think so, because he's been so close to the Foreign Affairs Committee on the Hill, and he's such a determined man, and he also has such an intimate knowledge of American views of all sorts. Conservative, liberal, and his idea is to, as you will remember, he had himself placed in charge of the space developments. He has a tremendous ambition for his country, but as I've noted before, he's always harnessing that ambition to fit the practical necessities in front of him. I would say, Joe, that he would have as deep an understanding of the art of British politics as any American would ever have, because he has followed the principles that British negotiators, shall we call that, between each other, followed for many years in Washington. Now, he will be a little more inept at it, perhaps, for a moment or two, but not for long.
You know, the one thing that struck me when this awful thing happened, I tried to adjust myself mentally to the facts of it, was a feeling that I looked out at the world, and here I had seen two men in balance. My mind goes back to the Vienna meeting, that first confrontation between Kennedy and Khrushchev, out of which seemed to emerge a new stability in the world, which consisted of the fact that John F. Kennedy could stand up to Nikita Khrushchev. Now, suddenly, you've taken that factor out, and what I can't yet feel is that I can see what's going to take the place of Kennedy in that balance. I'm worried.
Well, you have a right to be worried. We always do, because no man in that office is ever experienced totally for it, as you know.
No.
The one office in, that is the one defect in our government that is sometimes something better than a defect, but sometimes is very difficult. Every president has to learn our chief executive's job. As President Truman once said, when Eisenhower was about to come to the White House and he was a little bit diffident about sharing secrets and so forth and so on, President Eisenhower was diffident about coming to the White House. And President Truman said, well, all I want to do is tell him the problems he's going to have and that he better watch out. Just wait till he pushes that button and 6 months later turn around and find out nothing happened.
Yeah.
These experiences are going to have to be learned, but I would say that you'll remember that President Kennedy told Mr. Khrushchev at Vienna, it's going to be a cold winter, meaning we're not agreeing here at all. I don't think you'll find one whit of difference in the attitude of President Johnson and President Kennedy on that matter.
By the way, Morgan, I just had put in front of me a rundown on the front pages of all the morning London newspapers. It's interesting. Every one of them has used exactly the same headline, Kennedy assassinated. Mirror, Kennedy assassinated. Mail, Kennedy assassinated. Express, Kennedy assassinated. Telegraph, Herald, the whole lot of them. Everyone's used the same line.
And that's the only one that could use a good copy reader. Accurate line, because
that's
it was...
Right. I've never seen the London press all saying exactly the same thing before, though.
Oh? Very interesting indeed. It does go to show that the alliance between Britain and the United States, which always seems to be falling apart at the seams, is really never falling apart in emergency.
All right, you
they
are.
Have an absolute single interest. Ray, any further there?
No. There's a changing of the guard here, Morgan. A few minutes ago, a piece of mimeographed paper was put in my hands. I looked at the top remarks of President Johnson. Well, here was the first piece of paper with his name on it. It came a little bit startling. It was the text of what he had said at the airport.
Has the cabinet meeting finished?
No, the cabinet meeting is continuing. It will go on for some time. At 8 o'clock, President Johnson plans to sit down, possibly a little earlier than that, with the leaders of the Senate and the House and see where he goes from there.
And then I believe he has a meeting with Secretary McNamara separately.
That's happening now. That's going on.
That's the one the cabinet meeting then is where he gets the full...
Well,
statement.
You know, a number of members of the cabinet are not here. They
that's
were
right.
on their way to Japan, and their Secretary Rusk and others are flying back. Mr. Salinger, among others, with them. They presumably will get in sometime after midnight.
Well, thank you both very much.
The NBC radio network will stay on the air with continuous coverage until 1 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. We will resume broadcasting at 7:30 a.m. Eastern Standard Time Saturday, tomorrow, with continuous coverage. We pause now for 10 seconds for station identification.
The Detroit news stations, WWJ, WWJ-FM, Detroit. Back in Detroit, this is John Hultman of WWJ News, taking a few moments out to bring you Michigan reaction to the death of President Kennedy. The state of Michigan, from Detroit to Cooper Harbor and from Governor Romney to the Capitol Guides, today mourned the assassination of President Kennedy. The reaction was almost identical from Cadillac Square in Detroit to the smallest hamlets. First unbelieving, then stunned, then sadness. Not since the death of President Roosevelt in 1945 has Michigan been so shocked. Some people were even seen weeping openly on city streets. On the order of Secretary of State James Hare, flags were flown at half-mast after news of the president's tragic death reached him. All state employees were given the day off, and Hare asked all those with religious feeling to go to church and express their grief in prayers. The situation was the same in Detroit, with Mayor Kavanaugh sending all city workers home when he heard of the president's assassination. The presidents of all the auto companies in Detroit were quick to express their sympathy and shock that such a crime had been committed. All news media were swamped first with calls asking for confirmation of the news, then with official statements of sympathy and grief. In Detroit, at one point, immediately after the news reached the city, you couldn't get a dial tone on any downtown phone. The circuits were so swamped. Shows and personal appearances were canceled in many towns throughout Michigan, and Governor Romney asked the Board of Trustees at Michigan State to cancel tomorrow's MSU-Illinois Big Ten deciding football game. However, the trustees declined, but League Commissioner Bill Reed said he would call off the game if the nation officially is in mourning tomorrow. Now here is a statement from Jerome P. Kavanaugh, mayor of the city of Detroit.
I'm sure I speak for all of us here in Detroit when I say I'm literally grief-stricken over what's happened to our beloved president. To be struck down in the way in which he was in this hour of tragedy is almost unbelievable. It's a great personal loss for myself, my wife and family, because we've had the pleasure of meeting and knowing the president, President Kennedy. It's just unbelievable and incomprehensible that this could happen. And I would extend our most profound sorrow on not only behalf of my family, but on behalf of everyone here in Detroit, to Mrs. Kennedy and her bereaved family, as well as to Vice President Johnson, sending him our prayers in this great hour of need. I've asked that the public buildings be draped in black to commemorate this very tragic day, and also that our flags be flown at half-mast throughout the city. I truly am grief-stricken, and from the deep sorrow in my heart, I would extend most deep and profound sympathy to Mrs. Kennedy and her family.
Mayor Kavanaugh of the city of Detroit. Governor Romney is flying back to Michigan from Omaha, Nebraska. His plane is due to land at Lansing at about 9 o'clock tonight. That would be less than 2 hours from now. The Midwest Conference of Governors, which Romney was attending in Omaha, was canceled immediately when the news was heard. Here is his statement from George Trumbull in Lansing.
This is George Trumbull from Lansing. I am the governor's assistant press secretary, and this is the statement from Governor George Romney before he departed Omaha, Nebraska, where he was attending the Midwest Governors Conference, to return to Michigan upon learning the death of President Kennedy. The statement follows. The president's assassination is a horrible and measurable shock and a national tragedy. It is imperative that the assassin or assassins and any influence behind them or associated with them be identified. Upon behalf of all Michigan citizens, I extend our heartfelt grief and sympathy to the president's family. Let us unite behind our new president and give him our loyal support. Our grief should renew our dedication to serve our country.
George Trumbull, the aide to Governor Romney, reading the governor's statement. Former Democratic Governor John Swainson saw President Kennedy in Washington less than 1 month ago. The leader of the Democratic Party here in Michigan had this reaction to the president's death.
It's very difficult to speak today and at this particular time. The events reported from Dallas are uniquely an American tragedy. President John F. Kennedy has truly given his life for his country. It's unbelievable that this could happen in the United States in 1963. What goes through your mind at a time like this, of course, is a very individual thing. It was my great pleasure and honor to serve as the governor of the state of Michigan during the administration of John F. Kennedy. I knew the man personally, his family. I saw him while I was in Washington and spoke with him just about 1 month ago. He was a very human person, yet a man of great intellectual attainments. He's a man that also understood the drives and desires of individual people. It's probably significant that his assassination today occurs almost 100 years to the year of the assassination of President Lincoln. And probably many historians will draw significance from the fact that the issues 100 years ago were probably just as violent, just as much of a matter of concern to all Americans as they are today. This is a great tragedy.
Governor Swainson expressing his views on the death of President Kennedy. Late word from NBC and Morgan Beatty that Lee Oswald, the man who is in custody by the Dallas police in Dallas tonight, has denied any connection with shooting of either the policeman who was killed or with the death of President Kennedy and the shooting of Governor Connally. That late word coming in after 2 hours of questioning. Lee Oswald, the only suspect thus far, has denied any connection with either shooting. Other reaction today in this statement from Michigan Senator Philip A. Hart from his office at the Senate Office Building in Washington.
I think everybody, all of us, are burdened by this sense of despair and helplessness. Certainly there's one appropriate thing for all of us to do, and that's offer a prayer for the late president, and a prayer for this country.
A short and succinct statement from Senator Hart. Also, although Michigan Senators Patrick V. McNamara was not available for comment, we did receive this statement from his aide in Washington.
This is Robert Perrin, administrative assistant to Senator McNamara. On learning of the shooting of President Kennedy, the senator issued this brief statement. I quote, "This was an incredible and barbaric act of violence. Our prayers were with President Kennedy in his struggle for life, and they are now with the new president."
That statement from Bob Perrin at Senator McNamara's office in Washington. From labor and industry alike, statements of grief tonight. This one from UAW President Walter P. Reuther here in Detroit. "The civilized world has been shocked by this brutal and heinous crime. Our profoundest sympathies go out to Mrs. Kennedy and her family in this terrible and trying hour. All those who yearn for peace have suffered a grievous loss in the death of this gallant champion of human freedom. Our prayers are with President Johnson in this time of sorrow and trial." That from a close friend of President Kennedy, Walter P. Reuther, the president of the United Auto Workers. And this statement from industry from Henry Ford II, "The assassination of President Kennedy is a terrible tragedy for our nation and its people. The circumstances of his death are beyond belief. He will be remembered by millions of people the world over as a great man and a great president." From Lynn Townsend, president of Chrysler Corporation, he said that he joined in these words with other Americans in being shocked and deeply saddened by the death of our president. At Grand Rapids, Kent County Republican headquarters said Senator Barry Goldwater has canceled his scheduled Saturday appearance. He was to have been the main speaker at a $100 a plate fundraising dinner in Grand Rapids. Lieutenant Governor T. John Lisinski in Detroit said he was listening to a radio station, refused to believe it when he heard the president had been shot. He went on, "He was a great president with a certain quality that was out of the ordinary." There was also an expression of sympathy, shock, and disbelief from Peter B. Spivak, chairman of the Wayne County Republican Party.
"Today, someone or some group of persons is yet unknown, filled with some kind of a hate that passes, I'm sure, most of our understandings, have cut down the President of the United States. They've cut down a man who, more than many men, could have taken the easy way in life, but instead dedicated his life to public service. The sympathy which all of us extend to his family and his friends and to the new President Johnson and his family won't be enough. The job that needs to be done is for all of us to dedicate ourselves to fighting whatever cancer it was that produced this hateful deed in our society. And we must not rest until that is done. Tonight, in your prayers, remember not only the President's family, but President Johnson, and all the millions of people in this world to whom the United States and its President meant a hope of freedom. And remember that we must wipe out whatever the cancer that gnawed at the insides of someone or some people and perpetrated this vile and hateful act on mankind's conscience today.
Peter B. Spivak, the Wayne County Chairman of the Republican Party. From his office in Washington, Republican Representative Robert Griffin said, "No words can describe the shock of this day. In a nation where differences are not settled by violence, this dastardly act is a tragic blow to the liberty and security of every citizen. My deepest sympathies go to Mrs. Kennedy and the family." Michigan Republican National Committeeman John Martin Jr. was contacted in St. Louis, Missouri. He said, quote, "The terrible tragedy of the president's death is a loss to the nation and the whole world. Every man and woman in the country must be grieved beyond measure at this frightful incident. No matter what political views the people may hold, they are all with the president's wife and family in these tragic hours." Michigan State University President John Hanna told newsmen, "This comes as an unbelievable shock. The president was in good spirits when I saw him just a few days ago." And former Michigan Governor Wilbur M. Brucker said the shooting sounded like the work of a madman. He added, "I share with every other American the feeling of sincere sorrow." Religious leaders of all faiths also deplored the assassination. The Most Reverend Bishop Henry Donnelly of the Roman Catholic Archdiocese of Detroit said that as president, Kennedy had rightfully commanded the allegiance and the loyalty of all citizens of the nation. Donnelly said, "We believe that he tried conscientiously to fulfill the duties of his high office as he labored with fortitude and zeal for what he conceived to be our best interests. We ask that God be good to him now." The church spokesman scheduled a mass at Blessed Sacrament Cathedral for 11 a.m. tomorrow for President Kennedy, who as the first Catholic to occupy the presidency, died today. Prayers for Kennedy also were urged by Dr. Alan Zwan, president, and Dr. G. Merrill Lennox, executive director of the Metropolitan Council of Churches of Detroit. A solemn high mass for the repose of the soul of the late President Kennedy is scheduled for 7:30 p.m. tomorrow at St. Andrew's Cathedral in Grand Rapids. The Right Reverend Monsignor Charles Popel said the liturgy permits a requiem mass upon the death of a friend or loved one, and in this case, the president. Chancery officials were awaiting the return of Bishop Alan Babcock from Rome before deciding upon memorial services throughout the Archdiocese of Grand Rapids. The bishop is expected late tomorrow. In a telegram sent to Mrs. Kennedy by Reverend Dr. Wanzer H. Brunel, the moderator of the United Presbyterian Synod of Michigan, pastor of the Allen Park United Presbyterian Church, he said, "May I extend to you and to your children the deep shock and profound grief of our people at the news of the death of President Kennedy. We can take comfort, as we know you take comfort, in knowing that his work is by no means done, and that in all the years to come, his spirit will continue to lead us in the achievement of the ideals for which he lived and because of which he died." Cancellations have been pouring into the WWJ newsroom, and I might mention just briefly that perhaps if you are attending any public function tonight, you might check ahead of time to be sure that it is still being held. Many, many have been canceled, and I'll read briefly the few that I have in front of me now. The Goodfellow Championship football game, however, scheduled for Tiger Stadium tonight between Denby and Notre Dame, will be played as scheduled. That has not been canceled. However, the game will not be telecast or broadcast by WWJ radio and television. We will continue, as will our sister station, Channel 4, bring you reports throughout the evening and all day tomorrow about developments from Washington. Governor Romney requested that tomorrow's Michigan State-Illinois football game be canceled. The MSU Board of Trustees turned him down. Michigan State President John A. Hanna said an aide to Governor Romney asked that the game, which will decide the Big Ten title and the Rose Bowl bid, be called off. Hanna said he met with the board and the decision was made that we would proceed with the game. It was understood that Governor Otto Kerner of Illinois had made the same request to the president of the University of Illinois. And as we mentioned, Big Ten Commissioner Bill Reed is meeting now. Two games in the Big Ten have already been postponed, the Minnesota-Wisconsin game and the Purdue-Indiana game. And we should have a decision very shortly on the other games in the Big Ten. This release was received from the Detroit Federation of Teachers, Local 231 in Detroit. Their scheduled march for Tuesday on the Detroit Board of Education has been canceled. The demonstration march on the Detroit Board of Education by the Detroit Federation of Teachers, scheduled for Tuesday at 4 o'clock, has been canceled. The Fisher Theater canceled its performance of Hello, Dolly! With Carol Channing tonight. The Birmingham Public Schools announced all school activities there have been canceled. The Rooster Tail closed for business tonight. The Masonic Temple has canceled the performance by the New York Opera Company of La Boheme. It has been rescheduled for December 8th. The Jefferson Mac Conservation Council meeting scheduled for tonight has been canceled. And the J-Hop for Redford High School scheduled for tonight at Lovett Hall at Greenfield Village in Dearborn has been canceled. The Armenian Cultural Center has canceled their dance scheduled for tonight. And the Mercy College of Detroit concert at Ford Auditorium for tonight has been rescheduled to a later date, which will be announced shortly. The Jefferson PTA in Wyandotte announced that a show scheduled for tonight there has been postponed until Monday night at 8. The show scheduled for tomorrow night will be held. And the Ice Follies performance tonight at Olympia Stadium has been canceled. Nick Londis, general manager at Olympia, said that those holding tickets for tonight's show will be able to use them for tomorrow or Sunday's performances of the Ice Follies. Tomorrow and Sunday, tomorrow at 2 and 8:30, Sunday at 2 and 6. The Pistons basketball game in Cincinnati has been canceled. The news conference, which was to be held on Monday at the office of Detroit's Mayor Kavanaugh at 10:30 a.m., has been canceled as a result of the death of President Kennedy today. Michigan Bell Telephone Company reported telephone lines were jammed in Detroit following the first news of the shooting of President Kennedy. Most telephone lines were so jammed the system virtually broke down. Hundreds of persons called the Detroit News and WWJ News, where 1,123 calls were registered at the Detroit News switchboard between 1 and 4 o'clock. Hundreds of others, of course, could not get through. The jam became so bad that Martin Hayden, the editor of the Detroit News, was forced to ask radio and television to plead with listeners not to call for information, that we would provide it to you as quickly as we can. WWJ Radio and WWJ Television pleaded for an end to the calls. Our telephone lines were inoperable at that time. The jam lasted well until after the official confirmation of President Kennedy's death. I might also mention that, as Morgan Beatty stated earlier, NBC and WWJ will continue coverage, complete coverage, until 1 o'clock tomorrow morning, when we will bring you Music Till Dawn. At 7:30 tomorrow morning on WWJ Radio, NBC will continue and resume its coverage from Washington. Well, that's about all the local news we have for now. We will be back later with more. But for the moment, at 17 minutes past 7, let's return to Morgan Beatty in New York. By the way, we're in a dispatch from Germany.
Government, meaning, of course, the West German government and the whole German nation, stand beside you and the American people. Johnson, of course, is well known and well remembered here because it was he who was the first important visitor to reach West Berlin after the Communist Wall went up in August 61. Johnson appeared in Berlin and revived the spirits of the West Berliners even before any West German leaders had come to that city. So he's very warmly remembered, especially in Berlin, for that visit.
And we have considerable evidence, well, that President Johnson feels the cares of this office the minute he's undertaken it. He, in his own way, has expressed the same attitude that President Truman expressed when he said he felt like the stars and the moon and a ton of hay had fallen on him. President Johnson said nothing of that sort today, but once his helicopter had arrived at the White House with George McBundy, the president's very close personal advisor on security affairs, and with Defense Secretary Robert S. McNamara with him, the three of them left the rest of the party when President Johnson arrived at the White House. It seemed as if it were an act that had been performed without any thought, that the three of them walked together toward the door of the executive offices, and at the door, President Johnson sort of stopped. And he turned. His face was haggard. and he seemed to be alone. Mr. Bundy and Mr. McNamara seemed to sense the same thing. Johnson spoke very briefly to the two men as they walked through the Rose Garden, and then he turned and walked alone through the French doors into the White House. The man who bears the burden of the presidency of the United States, the central power in the alliance of the free world. I'm sure he senses it very deeply, and that first sentence he wrote shows it. This is a sad time for all people. Any more to report from that end, Wells?
Well, Morgan, the West German Army is still on mobilization alert, what the Germans call alert condition number one, which is the highest alert short of all-out war. This was taken as a precautionary measure, as you know, because the Germans were afraid that the Russians might try to capitalize on confusion or disarray following Mr. Kennedy's death and make some move against West Germany or West Berlin. So far, there is no sign of any unusual activity by the Russians or by the East German communists.
Well, Wells, is there any sign at all? I've noticed that other capitals do not have it as yet. Is there any sign at all that these governments or the peoples of other countries are aware that a suspect on the other side of the Iron Curtain, or let's see, a sympathizer with the other side of the Iron Curtain, an American by the name of Lee H. Oswald, who once defected to Russia, is in custody in this thing? Has there been any reaction to that at all?
Not a specific reaction, no, Morgan. I think that that is known here by the people who are following the news as it comes in. But, of course, it's already about 20 minutes after 1 in the morning, so most Germans have sorrowfully gone to bed, and those who are following the news haven't reacted particularly to the arrest of Oswald.